Paramananda. All glories to Assembled Devotees. All glories to Assembled Devotees. All glories to Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Sai Vidaya, Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Kanamani Namasis Rasvidim, Gaurarani Vishwani Nivishesha Shinivari Paschajar is Jarnay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, the Bhumi Gita. We're doing text, I think it's 19 through 25. So, we'll do text 19 responsibly. Santushta Karuna Maitra. Shanta Danta Statikshavaha. Atmarama Samadrisha. Prayasya Shramana Janaha. Santushta Karuna. Santushta Karuna Maitra. Shanta Danta Statikshavaha. Atmarama Samadrisha. Prayasya Shramana Janaha. Santushta Karuna Maitra. Shanta Danta Statikshavaha. Atmarama Samadrisha. Prayasya Shramana Janaha. Santushta, self-satisfied, Karuna, merciful, Maitra, friendly, Shanta, pacified, Danta, self-controlled, Tatikshavaha, tolerant, Atma Arama, enthused from within, Samadrisha, possessed of equal vision. Prayasha. For the most part. Shramana. endeavoring diligently for self-realization. And jhana, the people. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The people of Satya Yuga are for the most part self-satisfied, merciful, friendly to all, peaceful, sober, and tolerant. They take their pleasure from within, see all things equally, and always endeavor diligently for spiritual perfection. Report. Samadarshana, equal vision, is based on the perception of the Supreme Spirit behind all material variety and within all living entities. So we'll read through the next verses. Starting with text 20, we can read the Sanskrit together. Tretayam dharmapadanam turyam shohiyate shanai adharmapadar anrita hingsha shantosha vigrahai. In Treta Yuga, each leg of religion is gradually reduced by one quarter by the influence of the four pillars of irreligion: lying, violence, dissatisfaction, and quarrel. Report. By falsity, truth is diminished. By violence, mercy is diminished. By dissatisfaction, austerity is diminished. And by quarrel, charity and cleanliness are diminished. Text 21. Tada kriya tapo nishta nati hingsha navapata vargyastra yivridha varna brahmotara nipa. In the Treta age, people are devoted to ritual performances and severe austerities. They are not excessively violent, nor very lusty after sensual pleasure. Their interest lies primarily in religiosity, economic development, and regulated sense gratification. And they achieve prosperity by following the prescriptions of the three Vedas. Although in this age, society evolves into four separate classes, O Brahman, most people are Brahmins. So such yuga, there is no varnas and ashram, no classification. Treta Yuga, the Varnashram is there, the classifications for most people Brahmins. Text 22. Tapa satcham dayadanish vardam harsvati dvapare ingsa tushjantritya vushar dharma yas dharma lakshanar. In the Dwarpa Yuga, the religious qualities of austerity, truth, mercy, and charity are reduced to one half by their irreligious counterparts: dissatisfaction, untruth, violence, and enmity. 23. Yasha vino mahashila svadhyaya yayane vata arja kutumbino vishta varna chatra dvijotara. In the Dwarpa age, people are interested in glory and are noble, very noble. They devote themselves to the study of the Vedas, possess great opulence, support large families, and enjoy life with vigor. Of the four classes, the Kshatriyas and Brahmins are most numerous. 24. Kalo tu dharma padanam turyang sho dharma hetubi edamana shimamano yante sopi vinakshati. In the age of Kali, only one-fourth of the religious principles remains. That last remnant will continuously be decreased by ever-increasing principles of irreligion and will finally be destroyed. And text 25. Tasmin lubha dracara nirghaya shuchavarina durbhaga buritarshascha shudra dasotara praja. In the Kali age, people tend to be greedy, ill-behaved, and merciless, and they fight one another without good reason. Unfortunate and obsessed with material desires, the people of Kali Yuga are almost all Shudras and barbarians. Report. In this age, we can already observe that most people are laborers, clerks, fishermen, artisans, or other kind of workers within the Shudra category. Enlightened devotees of God and noble political leaders are extremely scarce. And even independent businessmen and farmers are a vanishing breed, as huge business conglomerates increasingly convert them into subservient employees. Vast regions of the earth are already populated by barbarians and semi-barbarous peoples, making the entire situation dangerous and bleak. The Krishna consciousness movement is empowered to rectify the current dismal state of affairs. It is the only hope for this ghastly age called Kali Yuga. Om Gyan Tarandha Shaganandjana Salakaya Chaksur Mitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. Panchakopa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyebhyascha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnadeve Namo Namaha. So we're getting further description of the decline of the good qualities of humankind as the yugas progress. Stepping through from Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga and seeing this general degeneration of the four qualities of religious principles and the increase of irreligious principles. So this has been a great concern of the Srimad Bhagavatam of Shukadeva Goswami. So now he's beginning again to talk about the age of Kali and its qualities. Because this is the beginning of the Kali Yuga when this is being spoken, and therefore it's quite an urgent issue. So the first three chapters of the Canto 12 have already described the many bad qualities of Kali Yuga. We've discussed those quite a bit, and those will be unfolding even more through the rest of this chapter. So we've discussed that rather extensively, and that will continue. So rather than, again, repeat more about the all the bad qualities here in Kali Yuga, I thought I would focus a little bit on what is specifically being talked about of how there is a decline in the principles of religion as we approach, as we actually enter Kali Yuga. And particularly, we now are left with one remaining quality of truthfulness and how it is breaking down. So I'm going to focus a little bit on that, on truthfulness, because this is the last vanishing principle of religion in this Kali Yuga. So, in fact, text 24, which you just read, said, in the age of Kali, only one-fourth of the religious principles remain. That last remnant will continuously be decreased by the ever-increasing principles of irreligion and will finally be destroyed. So yesterday, among the many nice points Dravida made was he was mentioning again how the Srimad Bhagavatam begins in the first canto, talking about Kali Yuga. In fact, I think it's about the second or third verse that the sages of Namisharanya speak when asking Sutta Goswami. They first say, this is the age of Kali. And they describe the problems with Kali Yuga, how this is a very difficult age, and that human beings are going to have a great difficulty in approaching self-realization. So right from the beginning, it's mentioned, and then, of course, later on in the first canto, in the 17th chapter, we have the whole story of Maharaj Parikshit encountering Kali and the discussions there, which is a very, very nice discussion of these points. And, of course, Srila Prabhupada has some very wonderful purports there describing the breakdown of religious principles in Kali Yuga and how that works. So we do learn that in this Kali Yuga, truthfulness is a quality in short supply. Now that probably comes to no great surprise to us as devotees, in fact to most people in the world, that there's this shortage of truthfulness. In fact, there's this phenomenon now, called sometimes fake news or issues on, can you believe everything that's out there? People get on the internet and there's so many different stories. They may be true, they may not be true. So it's very difficult to even find out what is materially true or not. And strangely enough, hard to believe, but even our president is sometimes criticized for a less than accurate presentation of the truth. And just to kind of nail that point home, the Washington Post, which is actually a very respected newspaper, it's not like some tabloid or something, it, along with the New York Times, are considered to be, fairly honest and, objective in the reporting. They've been keeping track, and as of March 17th of this year, they say that our president has made 9,179 false claims or misrepresentations of the truth, which is over 10 a day. It's quite remarkable that anyone could even do that. I think he should be given some credit. This takes great creativity and energy to be able to misrepresent the truth on such a consistent basis. So, all glories to him. But, let's not pick on one particular individual, because this is typical of this age, and we shouldn't be too surprised. Our leaders are not exemplary. This is natural because, as we're hearing here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning with having no varnas and ashrams, at least no varnas, then later in Treta Yuga we had mostly kshatriyas mostly Brahmins in Treta Yuga, then Dwapara Yuga was kshatriyas, Brahmins, and now Kali Yuga it's mostly shudras, it's described. So, I'm sorry? In Satya Yuga, yeah, there's no varna and ashrams. Everyone's on this absolute platform. There's no need for a breakdown of society into different classifications, which is meant for, of course, gradually elevating people and religious principles. They're already there, so it's not needed. Yeah, so, and now we're down at the other end of the spectrum when all of this is required to try to somehow elevate people, but yet we see that mostly we're dealing with shudras. So in chapter 17 of the first canto, Maharaj Parikshit comes upon Kali, beating the bull, who is the representation of Dharma, the principles of religion. Of course, he's very upset, and he pulls out his sword. He's ready to kill Kali. But they have a discussion, interesting discussion between Kali and a discussion with the bull, and we hear about these principles of religion. And Dharma explains how the three legs have already been broken due to the prevalence of irreligion, and the last remaining leg is that of Satyam. So Bhagavatam 1:17, 24, and 25 says, in the age of Satya truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. And now we're hearing another interpretation of cleanliness may also be charity. So at any rate, but it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. You are now standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or other hobbling along. But quarrel personified, Kali, flourishing by deceit, is also trying to destroy that leg. So this is the situation that we find. Some truthfulness left, but it is even vanishing as Kali Yuga progresses. And Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, actually to a couple verses later, 33, says there are different countries in different parts of the world, and each and every country may have different types of sacrifice to please the Supreme Lord. But the central point in pleasing him is ascertained in the Bhagavatam, and it is truthfulness. Interesting. Prabhupada says that the main way of pleasing the Lord is truthfulness. The basic principle of religion is truthfulness, and the ultimate goal of all religion is to satisfy the Lord. So I'm going to talk in a minute a little bit more about what truthfulness really means and how truthfulness really is the way of serving the Lord and of glorifying the Lord. But it isn't surprising that truthfulness is becoming more and more absent in our modern society. After all, this is Kali Yuga. This is foretold in the Bhagavatam that this would be the situation. We've been hearing throughout the 12th canto as well about all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, which we see before us. So it's the last leg of Dharma is his truthfulness and rapidly deteriorating, but it's still appreciated. I mean, you know, actually, because there's so much discussion about truthfulness means that people expect truthfulness. They actually appreciate it when they see it. So the average person really expects their leaders to be truthful, expects the institutions to be truthful, and hopes that there's truthfulness in ordinary dealings. But then, of course, that often doesn't happen, and we've almost become to expect deception in politicians, in business, in law. Prabhupada once said, particularly the Indian situation, he says, business means cheating. In other words, it's like you expect it. You know, you expect that this cheating or lying or falsehood is just happening all around you. I was thinking about this while there's this strong reaction to the increase of falsehood and the increase of lying in Kali Yuga. And in fact, even I was thinking about these recent inquiries and all, which I really don't follow very well, and I may be wrong on the details here. But it seems like a lot of stuff with all these different reports and Trump and all the stuff that's happening and all of it, and really not even so much him, but the people under him and the different, you know, advisors and his lawyer who was just put in prison, I think. That's calling. It seems to really center around deception and lying. Because a lot of the charges are about lying to Congress or lying to the courts or saying one thing that was not true. So this is a very central issue. And I was thinking back to when Bill Clinton was impeached by Congress, the charge was perjury, that he lied to Congress. Not what he did as far as his, you know, sexual proclivities, because they couldn't really get him on that, you know. But it was perjury. So the idea is that we would hope and expect that our leaders would come to a certain level of truthfulness. And it's something that is still there in people in Kali Yuga, that they want truthfulness, even though it is breaking down and deteriorating all around them. So this is an important consideration. It's a very important principle in our scriptures. In fact, a very famous verse in the 8th canto, chapter 20, verse 4 of the Bhagavatam, says there is nothing more sinful than untruthfulness. Because of this, Mother Earth once said, I can bear any heavy thing except a person who is a liar. That's probably one we've heard. I'm sure many parents have told their children this verse. You know. So, yeah, Mother Earth cannot bear a liar. And Prabhupada says in the purport to that, even in the most common dealings, people are accustomed to speaking so many lies. No one is free from sinful reactions to speaking lies. Under the circumstance, one can just imagine how this has overburdened the earth and indeed the entire universe. So this untruthfulness is really what is bringing down Kali Yuga into this very degraded state that we're seeing. And in fact, truthfulness is described in the Bhagavad Gita in several places. It's an important quality in the 10th chapter and the qualities created by Krishna. In the 16th chapter, the divine qualities, truthfulness is there. And in the 18th chapter, text 42, this word arjavam, or honesty, is one of the qualities by which the Brahmins work. So, of course, truthfulness is essential to the Brahmin. It's one of the first qualities that one who is a religious person has. Of course, as we've been hearing, we have very few Brahmins in this age of Kali. Reminds me, there was a story of Gautama Muni, great sage. And a boy comes to Gautama Muni and he asks to become his disciple. And Gautama Muni only accepts one who is a Brahmin as a disciple, former ages. So he asks the boy who his father was. But the boy doesn't know who his father was. And he says, well, go ask your mother. And the mother tells him, well, actually, I've been with many men and I really don't know who your father is. So the boy returns to Gautama and he tells him, I don't know who my father was, my mother, this or this and that. And Gautama says to him, you are actually a Brahmin because you are truly honest. And he accepted him as a disciple. So in other words, he showed the quality, demonstrated the quality of truthfulness, of honesty, even though it was an embarrassing situation for him. You know, that he could have made something up, but he didn't. And so this great sage recognized that even though he wasn't born as a Brahmin, he had the quality of a Brahmin in terms of truthfulness. So that's our hope. Even if we're born in the age of Kali, due to the great mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have the opportunity to become Brahmins and develop these good qualities such as truthfulness. Of course, Prabhupada said we are actually like Brahmins in training. So Prabhupada gives us Brahmin initiation, then we have an opportunity to try to develop those qualities. It's not like a conferral that someone, you know, yes, I have all these qualities of a Brahmin. But as Kali Yuga progresses, it becomes more and more difficult. Truthfulness is breaking down, and there are very few Brahmins. Most people are Shudras. I thought it was interesting, this word, the examples we're given here in Kali Yuga in this purport today says most people are laborers, clerks, fishermen, artisans. But that was kind of an interesting breakdown. I actually have never met a professional fisherman in my life. But I was reading, actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his purport, he says that the word Shudra Dashatarna means Shudras and fishermen. So, I mean, it's, I don't know Sanskrit, and I don't know exactly what that means, but Vishwanath confirms that somehow fishermen, as implied in this verse. So anyway, we have basically people who are not religious leaders. They're not even great political leaders. They're not great anything. Basically, we have average common workers in Kali Yuga. So that's what we find, which would be good, which would be not a problem if they follow religious principles. But we have not only that everyone is Shudra, but because they have not so much intelligence, they don't know what is right, what is wrong, how to follow religious principles, and how to inquire about the absolute truth. So we're talking about truthfulness, about its importance, but this actually can be somewhat of a subtle concept. And it's not always just so black and white, is it? For instance, is truthfulness more than just the absence of telling a lie? If I just don't tell a lie, is that truthful? We have a story, it's probably not true, but part of our mythology is that this George Washington, our first president, he could not tell a lie, right? The story of he cut down the cherry tree, I don't know why he did, but anyway, his father says, did you do that? And he said, yes, father, I cannot tell a lie, I did it. So this was considered a good quality. Obviously, it's an unusual quality in Kali Yuga that it's mentioned as part of the folklore of George Washington. But anyway, did that make him a great person? Did it make him a wise person or a spiritually enlightened person? No, not necessarily. But he did have this one quality, apparently, which at least could be a prerequisite, perhaps, for further spiritual development. So truthfulness in itself, of course, is not necessarily the goal of life unless it's coupled with real truthfulness of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Might one ask also, are there times when one doesn't tell the truth? Do we always tell the truth, even if it means offending a person? Do I go up to a person and say, you know, I'm just thinking, I have to tell you, you're really ugly. Why would one do that? And you think, well, it's being truthful. No, but it's also not being kind. It's not, you know, there's many other qualities of devotee that are balanced with truthfulness. So, so there are times, and also, and sometimes there's a greater good or greater value. What if you had to protect somebody's life by telling a lie? Most of us would say, well, that would trump telling the truth if it meant, say, saving somebody's life. And I can't think of an example, but, theoretically, you know what? You mean about Yudhishthir?
No.
Oh, I was going to go with Yudhishthir. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
But it's exactly that, saving a life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Brahmin and you're the Brahmin who absolutely will always tell the truth, so he's living in a simple cottage and suddenly some desperate person runs up and he says, some thieves after me and after my watch or something. So then he runs off, you know. And then the thieves come and said, where did he go? Now, what do you do? I said, oh, I can't tell a lie. He went around the back there and I got to kill him. Is that virtue? It's not. It's a great. And that one Yudhishthir.
Right. Good example. Yeah. And then, of course, Krishna asked Yudhishthir to tell a lie in the battle. So he said, Ashwatthama is dead. Yudhishthir didn't want to do it because he was Dharmaraj. He was completely filled with all virtue, known for that. And he hesitated, but he complied. Why? Because it was Krishna's order. And that's the lesson there, that truthfulness is absolute only in relationship to Krishna. Whatever, Krishna is the absolute truth. We have that phrase, the absolute truth. And because Krishna is the absolute truth, everything in relationship to Krishna is true. So that's sort of our guideline. That's the goal, is to be in accordance with Krishna's desire and Krishna's orders. And that's real truth. So truthfulness also requires knowledge. Something can't really be true unless it's true. I know that sounds kind of redundant, but it's interesting because there's different philosophical considerations about what is actually true, what's actually knowledge. You know, philosophers don't talk about these things, and they debate endlessly, and they come up with so many theories. But there is a philosophical connection between truth and knowledge. In fact, I think, from my understanding, that Aristotle said that truth is not merely a belief or an opinion. It has to correspond with reality. It's not just anything I think is true. This is called the correspondence theory of truth or reality in metaphysics. In other words, there's objective facts to the world. Now, does everyone agree that? Today, people dispute that even. C.T.D. Mooney isn't here to correct me, I don't think, so I can get away with my, you know, very weak knowledge of philosophy. But I believe, and again, this is I believe, that in postmodernist thought, the idea is that truth is subjective, that it's relative. I mean, in other words, you know, this is a commonly held philosophical belief now that people create their own reality of what is true for them. You know, the way I perceive the world is just as true as the way that you perceive the world. Doesn't matter whether I'm psychotic or not. Whatever our realities are, it's all equal. It's all subjective. It's all about how I perceive things and you perceive things. Well, there seems to be a certain silliness about this because, you know, most of us think more the classical philosophical stances, certainly our Vedas would say, yes, there are things that are true. There is an objective reality. It's an objective reality to the world because Krishna has created this world and he creates it according to the laws of nature, and the laws of nature are there and they are absolute and there is a reality. Now, we may have different perceptions of that reality, that's true. But it may or may not make it reality. So, what is the highest reality? Well, the highest reality is spiritual truth and understanding the real purpose of life. That's kind of our beginning point of truth. And in fact, this is the beginning of the Vedas, Vedanta Sutra. It starts out with the Tato Brahma Jignasa. That now, when one is in this human form of life, it's a time to inquire about the absolute truth. Right? This is the purpose of life, to understand the truth. You know, whatever that truth may be, and we understand that real truthfulness is understanding one's spiritual existence, one's spiritual reality, and one's spiritual relationship with the absolute truth, Krishna. So real truthfulness begins when one knows and speaks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we are speaking in relation with Krishna and our understanding of Krishna is given by authority from the Vedas, the Acharyas, the spiritual master, that is truth. So, the very beginning of Bhagavatam, going back, 111, says, Satcham Param Dhimahi, I meditate on Satcham, the absolute truth. So we keep coming back to this idea of truth and how essential it is. And that's what Prabhupada was saying, that the essential, that this satyam or truthfulness is the essential principle of religion, because Krishna is that supreme absolute truth. And we try to meditate upon that truth, we try to understand that truth and serve that supreme truth. It's not just an abstract jnani type of meditation. But further, the devotee, through bhakti and devotion, understands that our loving devotional service to that absolute truth is the perfection of life. So, in fact, Srila Prabhupada often translated and defined that the Satcham Param is the absolute truth and that to know Krishna is the essence. So truthfulness is essential because devotees understand and can impart the truth of spiritual knowledge. So the spiritual knowledge, this truth, is, as we said, discovered, is understood through the scriptures, through Krishna's speaking, the Vedic literatures, and through the great devotees speaking about Krishna, through the line of spiritual masters and acharyas, and from the guru. So everyone needs to attempt to learn that truth from highly elevated souls. And why are they elevated souls? Because they have understood the truth. We hear Bhagavad Gita 4:34. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you. Why? Because they have seen the truth. So because the spiritual master has understood the truth, has seen the truth, and realized the truth, they are able to impart that same truth unto other conditioned souls. So they also can come to that understanding. So this Jnaninas Tattva Darshana, the great souls have seen the truth. And Jnana, of course, is often used as knowledge or truth or whatever, but there's also the implication that this is realized knowledge. not just empirical knowledge or logical knowledge or perceptual knowledge of the world. I can tell you absolute truth. This is a floor, this is a mridanga. I can absolutely tell you that is the truth. Okay, so what? I mean, that hasn't really given you much information about, you know, the nature of reality and what is the goal of life and what is my purpose here. No, it's deep realization of the self, of oneself in relationship with Krishna, and obviously the material world that we find ourselves in. So these things are knowledge. This is like Bhagavad Gita tells us, or Prabhupada says about the Bhagavad Gita in the introduction, the five elements of knowledge that are there: Krishna, the jiva, prakriti, material energy, time, and karma. In other words, we understand this combination of elements as truth. And when those things are understood, then we are in perfect knowledge. So, the devotee speaks the truth. Not necessarily, you know, every little thought that comes into our mind, you know, but we speak the basic truth. And we should tell the truth in spiritual matters, those things which are the essence of life. Srila Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita 10.4, the truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is truth. That was kind of like the example, I suppose, not telling that the thief is going to rob you, that would also be true. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that the facts be presented so they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth. So speaking factually, not refraining from speaking the truth, is very important, Srila Prabhupada is saying. But I thought it was interesting, he said that it's presented for the benefit of others. So that's also important to understand, that we don't just speak the truth, but we speak the absolute truth, and we deliver it in such a way that it is for the benefit of mankind, for the benefit of others. So sometimes it's even said that one should not disturb the minds of those who are unfaithful and things like that. In other words, we have those statements as well. So in other words, you know, truthfulness is somewhat moderated by other qualities. One is that it's delivered appropriately, time, place, and circumstance. People aren't always ready for the same amount of truth. And so the devotee intelligently decides that or understands that. I remember years ago, back when we used to have lots of guests coming to Sunday feast, we all sit down with somebody at the Sunday feast and preach to them, and I was talking to people, and this brahmacharya I knew was talking to someone else, and he was a little bit of a quirky type. We had a few quirky types. We don't anymore, but used to. I was talking to him afterwards. He was talking to these two young people, and I said, "Well, what'd you talk about?" He says, "Oh, well, you know, they were brand new." So he says, "So, you know, I like to start real basic, so I just tell them about the demigods and things like that." I go, "Okay, nice basic place to start." This was in Los Angeles, by the way. In other words, that's true about the demigods, but is that, you know, was that helpful to the person? Because we want to speak for the benefit of others, for the benefit of mankind. So we want to speak intelligently. We tell people to the degree that they can understand, not that we change the philosophy or we hide the philosophy. Or we somehow are, you know, embarrassed by it. No, of course not. This is the absolute truth. This is for the benefit of everyone. You know, but people can take various amounts of it depending upon their level of realization, their readiness. And we also balance that with other qualities devotees have, like kindness and mercy and compassion. So, a devotee is always truthful. A devotee is also compassionate, kind, and merciful. So anyway, it's just intelligence. We balance these things in a way that we can make the best presentation because it's for one purpose, to help a person come to Krishna consciousness. So that truth is to offer sacrifice for the pleasure of God. And the purport here says that the best sacrifice for this age is Sankirtan Jagya. So giving people the chanting of the holy name is the highest form of truth that we can give to people.
I was thinking one final point here about truthfulness, and that sometimes it's very difficult for the living entities to be truthful with themselves. Sometimes it's hard for us to always be truthful with ourselves, because that self-deception is actually there from the beginning of the creation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, it says Brahma first created the nesha engagements like self-deception, mohan. Self-deception, the first thing created. What does that mean? Well, it means that we deceive ourselves, you know, by thinking, you know, I am this body, I am here to enjoy in the world, I am the controller of everything, I am the master of my fate, the master of my destiny, and my purpose is simply to enjoy life as much as possible. This is illusion. This is self-deception. We tend to want to stay and enjoy in this material world. We deceive ourselves. We're not truthful about the futility of it, about the pain and the suffering and all the difficulties that are here, which is not surprising. Because if we want to stay in this material world and try to enjoy it, then we have to undergo a lot of self-deception, and we have to really engage, almost willingly, in illusion. And therefore, we don't always understand. It's hard for us to confront, even as devotees sometimes, to confront our attachments, to confront our illusions. So how do we do that? Because through knowledge, going back to truthfulness, when knowledge is there, the truthfulness coming from the guru, coming from the scriptures, helps to break that illusion. Illusion is broken when we hear the truth, when we hear things as they are. So we need to hear Bhagavad Gita as it is. We need to hear from the spiritual master. We need to hear this absolute knowledge. And sometimes even it impinges a little bit on our comfort, and it impinges a little bit on the illusions that we create. That is for our ultimate benefit. That is the real benefit, the real self-interest of the living entity. And the Guru and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are working for the best interest of the living entity. They are all merciful. That mercy is there for all of us conditioned souls. And sometimes that mercy might even be a little jarring or a little bit, you know, it's like a wake-up call to us. But it is there for the benefit to not to cause difficulty, but to relieve our suffering. Because as long as we're in this material world, thinking we're our bodies, trying to enjoy this material world, we know there's going to be one result, and that's going to be increased suffering and difficulty and unhappiness. So the great spiritual personalities, these great spiritual literatures, try to break that illusion, give us the real truth that will bring us to our ultimate place of happiness as devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. Stop at that point. If there are any comments or questions, Trivikram, come on.
The story that Dravida Prabhu related, actually Lord Krishna was he was relating the very story to Arjuna. Arjuna had wanted to kill Yudhishthira because Yudhishthira had told him to give up his Gandiva bow to someone else. And Arjuna had made a promise that whoever asks him to do that, he will kill him. So he pulled out his sword and was going to kill Yudhishthira. And Lord Krishna says that sometimes you have to ascertain truth in the proper perspective. And then he related this story with the sage telling the thieves that the guys then went that way. And he said for that reason, the sage had to see hell. See? So then, and then he explained how he could not kill Yudhishthira, but not kill him.
Right.
You know, interesting.
Right.
But I have another quick point, and that is the Bhagavatam explains that how the moon is higher than the sun. But we know, I mean, I know several countries have actually sent spaceships to the moon, and they know the distance, you know. And so a lot of devotees would confront me and say that, you know, I'm supporting the scientists because I'm saying that the moon is closer to the earth than the sun, you know, like this. They even call me, like one of them was calling me an atheist.
I don't really want to go down this road too much. I'm not an expert on cosmology. I'm not really going to be able to answer your question. However, if there's some contradiction between the Srimad Bhagavatam and what we think of as science, then it's just that we don't understand fully, is my conception of it. You know, that, and in fact, and I know when the scientists and others were working on the Temple of Vedic Planetarium in Mayapur, you know, they spent, I don't know how many countless hundreds and thousands of hours trying to work all these things out, understand the different scriptures, go to different experts and like that. And sometimes it's a matter of how things are worded or how we understand it or how things, you know, are arranged in many different ways. So I guess I'm just saying in general, my attitude has always been, if there's something that seems contradictory or something I don't understand from the guru or from the scripture, then basically I don't understand it. And I need to try to somehow understand it, or if I can't, I'm not going to worry about it. I guess I have a very naive, sort of simplistic viewpoint that basically the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and Srila Prabhupada has given us everything, has given us the absolute truth. Everything that I have read and everything I've heard from Prabhupada has been true, has worked for me in my life. It's basically saved me from a lifetime of suffering, and it's helping me to become a devotee of the Lord. And, you know, if there's a few things that are still out there that are difficult to understand, who am I to think that I can understand everything with my puny brain? Okay. With anything on the women's side? Okay. Trivita Prabhu.
I may be wrong, but I understood that the resolution to that, Yudhishthira's refusing to say Ashwatthama was dead and thereby discourage Dronacharya and make him vulnerable, was that Krishna said, all right, look, there's also an elephant named Ashwatthama. He's been killed.
Right.
So you say Ashwatthama the elephant is killed. So that I can do. So Ashwatthama the elephant is killed. And while he's saying the elephant part, Krishna's blowing the conch. So Dronacharya, all he heard was Ashwatthama is dead. Didn't hear the elephant part.
Right.
So he was discouraged and he told the truth.
Right. Yeah, that's why I heard it too, that it was a kind of a sleight of hand there. Okay. Yes. I thank you all very much. All glory to you, Prabhupada.